In America, you have a right to be stupid.
I mean, I do think at a certain point you've made enough money.
$100 billion, $1 trillion.
Come on!
If you got a business, you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen.
Listen to reason.
We're lending money we don't have to kids who will never be able to pay it back, to train them for jobs that don't exist anymore.
My faith has really allowed me to overcome a lot of things and hard work. You know, nothing comes easy.
We're so focused on getting into the corner office, we forgot how to build a corner office.
There's a clear cause and effect here that is as neat and predictable as a law of physics. As government expands, liberty contracts.
Finding real answers to form real solutions for a better America. KLZ 560 presents Rush to Reason. Here's your host, John Rush.
And welcome to Rush Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. This is Andy Pate sitting in for John Rush today, who is enjoying a much-needed day off. And there it is, the Trump trade! Are you guys ready? I am so ready. I hope you're on board. I am definitely all aboard the Trump train. Now, I'm going to tell you, folks, we're going to talk a lot about politics today. I promise that. I promise we will get to that. But first, happy birthday to my good friend, Dan Muir. Dan, happy birthday. I know you're out there listening. John Rush just had a birthday. Another reason that he's off today. That's kind of a good thing. They're all having birthdays right now, which is very cool. I had my birthday a couple months ago because I wanted to be different. I actually planned that out. So I feel pretty proud of myself. I do promise that we're going to get to a lot of, you know, the Trump-Biden debate. Definitely we're going to get into Amy Coney Barrett. We're going to get into that in the next segment. But first, I want to get away from politics for just a moment. I saw this sign last night. It's like it's the size of one of those campaign signs, you know, where they're, you know, stuffed into the ground. And it read this: psychic, big words, psychic soulmate specialist reunites lovers permanently. I just wanted to wonder, would anyone go to a psychic to be reunited with all their lovers permanently? Now, I'm not quite sure what that means. It kind of scares me. You know, first of all, does this mean all your lovers? Because I'm wondering, you know, with Bill Clinton, that might take a lot of space. What do you think, Charlie? You think they'd have a numbering system? Maybe letters? The W's over here, the G's over there. I guess L would be from all the Lolita Express. Yeah, wouldn't. Lewinsky. Exactly. Thank you, Charlie. Lewinsky. So throughout the show today, by the way, 303-477-5600, if you want to give us a call, and we can talk politics, we can talk, you know, Trump and all these things. But also, if you want to share, how did you meet your soulmate? Or maybe how are you keeping your soulmate? Since I guess that's what this sign is all about, you know, keeping your soulmate. Let me know, because I'm really curious, how did you meet the right one? Did you hire a psychic? Okay, I mean, maybe you went to college frat parties, you had a psychic wingman. You know, I sense in the forest this girl is into you and she's had a lot to drink. I don't know. What are you into? Maybe you met, with me, I met my wife at church. Okay, did you meet your soulmate at church? Did you meet your soulmate online? A lot of people do a lot of online dating. I think that's great. I have never done it because I'm not too good online. Maybe you met in this day and age, maybe you met that special someone in an online church, because that's about the only place we have church right now. Did you meet in a business? Did you meet at work? I think that's probably one of the most common places because you're stuffed there for several hours a day. If you met somebody that way, I would just like to know how you met your soulmate. All right. And we will be doing that just throughout the day. But first, we're going to take a time out. When we come back, we are going to be talking to Charlie. Who do we got first?
It's time to stop painting over the damage and replace your siding. You'll be costing yourself more money in the long run by painting over wood rot and split boards every few years instead of committing to a full exterior redo with Mighty Hand. Micah and his team offer Diamond Coat Siding, which comes with a 30-year, no paint, no fade warranty, so you'll have great-looking, durable siding for decades. You've been putting it off because you know it's a big expense, but you're not planning to move anytime soon, and you do want to feel like you're living in a nice place. Use some of that refi money to hire a local business you know will do a good job. As a full-service construction company, Mighty Hand Construction can handle any exterior work in Northern Colorado, including roofing, siding, windows, driveways, decks, and more. Ask Micah and his team for an estimate on a full exterior redo at klzradio.com/mightyhand. Honoring God, impacting customers.
Take AIM. Affordable Interest Mortgage has been offering the Asset Manager all-in-one loan for over 11 years. We are experienced in helping homeowners pay thousands less in interest on their mortgage, own their home faster, all without spending one dime more. 720-895-0500. Take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage, where we have hundreds of clients that have been using this loans to build their equity faster, access emergency funds when necessary, and pay off their home in 8 to 13 years versus 25 to 30. People initially believe this loan is too good to be true, but it is true. Call 720-895-0500 now to see if you qualify. Loans from $100,000 to $2.5 million, same rate. Ask our previous clients. They will tell you it works. Call 720-895-0500 and work with the experts. This loan has been around since 1965. Affordable Interest Mortgage, where it's all about you. 720-895-0500. Regulated by DORA, NMLS 298191, Equal Credit Lender.
Now is the time to zero in on your target audience. So many businesses spread themselves too thin by trying to reach an enormous pool of customers. John Rush can help you define your niche, trimming the fat so you can maximize your profits. Not just surviving the shutdowns, but actually beating out your competition with smarter business strategies. You've done a good job staying afloat. Now it's time to hone in on your most profitable customers. Reach John now at RushToReason.com.
Now, speaking of John, we have on the line Giancarlo. Is that how we say it, Giancarlo Canaparo? Is that correct, sir?
That is. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Giancarlo Canaparo from Heritage. We always get all of our geniuses from Heritage. So just so you know, you have to be absolutely genius in everything you say
I'm
today.
Sorry, you've got the B team today, I'm afraid.
So do you. Hey, way do we go. All right. I want to talk about Justice Kavanaugh. My goodness. You know, but it just feels that way, doesn't it? Amy Coney Barrett. I guess the attacks are already ramping up on her. Could you weigh in on that?
Yeah. So one of the things to start off with, to put things in perspective, is who Judge Amy Coney Barrett is. And to start with, she's, from a personal standpoint, from a professional standpoint, she's really unassailable. I mean, she graduated to the top of her class in law school. She got a clerkship with Justice Scalia on the Supreme Court, and her letter of recommendation was one line from her professor: "She's the best student I ever had." She's been an academic where her scholarship on the role of the federal courts was, top-notch work. Now she's been a judge for 3 years. So you've seen now the Democrats in the Senate and their allies in the media have decided, we can't say she's unqualified.
Well, Giancarlo, quick question here. Did Joe Biden ever have a professor say, "best student I ever had"?
As far as I know, no.
Yeah, I don't think so. He didn't do too well. Anyway, sorry. I'm being nasty. I'm being mean. Go ahead. Continue.
Well, so, her qualifications are unassailable.
Right.
When you look at her writings and things, there's no evidence out there that she's some sort of right-wing crusader who's just going to impose her views on the law. What her writings and her judicial opinions show is someone who's really deeply committed to the idea that a judge is not a legislator, a judge is not a politician. You've got to read the Constitution and apply the words there. You've got to read the text of statutes and apply the words faithfully there. So they can't attack her that way. So what they've gone after, of all things, her children. So she's got 7 children. She's had 5 of her own, and she and her husband adopted 2 children from Haiti. And the attacks started immediately. A bunch of people, Democratic strategists, somebody who runs a progressive political action campaign, a prominent professor who's sort of leading the charge of this critical race theory, they all went after her adoption and said, "Look, these might be sketchy. You never know. These adoptions from Haiti, they might have done something illegal, so you have to go and look at those."
Why did they even think that in the first place?
Well, so I think 2 reasons. Number one, it's a line of attack, and they need something. Number two, I think, well, let me give you three reasons. Number two, I think these are just sort of, you know, these are ugly people doing, trying anything, no matter how low it is. And number three, going to the professor, this guy's name is Dr. Ibram Kendi, and he said that white people, like the Barretts, will try to, and I quote, colonize black children to civilize them and pull them out of the countries where they're rightfully supposed to be, out of the races they're rightfully supposed to be with, in order to hide their white privilege and racism.
Okay, well, before you run on from there, Giancarlo, sure. I thought colonization was you go in and take over another place, not you rescue a couple kids needing a home from another place and bring them to your place. How is that? What are you colonizing? Their bedroom? You know, their rec room where they play? I'm lost here.
Right. I mean, you would think. And, you know, most people, when they see, you know, two people who have brought two children out of poverty and two orphans out of poverty into their own home, loved them just as much as their own children, and created a family that is, you know, biracial or a mixed race family, and they're as united as any other family. You know, that's something to celebrate. It's a beautiful thing. It's not something to be, you know, torn down and said that it's some sort of evil. I mean, that the mindset that says that kind of thing is bad. And there's a lot of words you could use to describe it, but the one that I just sums it up, it's evil.
Yes. By the way, folks, we're talking to Giancarlo Canaparo of Heritage. Giancarlo, do you think that they think that that's even going to go anywhere? I mean, this attack seems so feeble. It almost tells me they got nothing.
I mean, that is exactly what it shows me. I mean, you know, we go back to her qualifications. They're unassailable, right? I mean, she has more time on the bench than Justice Elena Kagan did. You know, she has been a professor. She's been in private practice. I mean, her qualifications, you couldn't find someone with a better resume for that seat. And when it comes to her writing, her judicial opinion, she is just a good, stalwart, you know, stick to the text. Don't be a legislator. Don't be a politician in a robe. So they have to spin whatever they can. Now, I don't think this line of attack is going to get any ground in the Senate during the confirmation hearing. But that's kind of the relationship that the Democrats have with left-wing media elements, right? These people, these left-wing talking heads, get to spin out these extreme theories and sort of test them with the public. But you can be sure that, you know, these attacks are not acceptable, and we're not going to let, you know, liberals in the media spin these despicable attacks and try to get away with them.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, here's what gets me. So many of these attacks are the kind that no matter which way you go, they're going to attack you. If you're Donald Trump and you're in office and you're responding to COVID, right, if you rush something too fast, they're going to say you rushed and you were reckless rushing this too fast. If you take a little longer, like with testing, they're going to say you endangered all these lives by delaying. Right. No matter which way you go, you either went too fast, you delayed, you did too much of this, too little of that. In her case, Amy Coney Barrett's, what if she had adopted two kids from Sweden? I mean, that they look like, you know, the girls from ABBA. All right. And
right.
She had, what would they say then? Go ahead.
Right. Well, then the attack is, you know, first of all, you know, you didn't have to adopt children. You could have children of your own. So you didn't have to adopt them. But then the attack is
five
also,
wasn't
well,
enough.
You really wanted to adopt. Yeah, right, exactly. So then the other attack is, well, if you really wanted to adopt children, why didn't you adopt them from Haiti, where there isn't a government that can take care of orphans as well? So you're right. There's a catch-22. You're never safe.
Maybe Joe Biden would say, buy American. Why didn't you get American kids? I don't know. I'm reaching at straws here. This is so ludicrous that they could actually think that this is going to go anywhere. Here's another thing that I don't understand at all, Giancarlo. They say that she is going to be an activist, right? Which is unbelievable considering the woman she would be replacing. And by the way, I think RBG was a brilliant scholar. I really do. I think she was brilliant, just like ACB is, Amy Coney Barrett. But has anyone asked at all, you know, if RBG ever let her beliefs intrude on her judgments. Does anybody hold her to that standard?
Well, you've hit on sort of the crux of the issue, right? A lot of liberals out there who are attacking Amy Coney Barrett as being as going to be an activist. Well, for one thing, there's zero evidence of that in Amy Coney Barrett's record. In fact, quite the opposite. She said during her last confirmation, you know, I believe it is unlawful for a judge to impose her personal beliefs from wherever they may be found on law. And that is the rule that she has applied in every case that has come before her on her 3 years on the circuit court. She's participated in deciding about 600 cases, and you won't find any evidence of activism there. But the left just simply cannot get its head around the idea that there are judges who really are committed to the text of the law and that they're not activists. And so when that's your frame of reference, everything comes down to, well, if a judge, I assume a judge uses his or her personal beliefs in deciding cases, and so I want progressive judges and I don't want conservative judges. But there's no talk at all about how a judge actually should decide cases, which is by being a judge and not a politician.
Right. Let the laws be drawn up by people we can vote out of office for drawing up bad laws. Okay? If a judge, I can't vote a judge out. Not this kind of judge. It's lifetime. And I think, Giancarlo, that what we're really seeing with the left is projection. Okay? They want to use the courts to control other people's lives. We on the right, for the most part, there are exceptions. We cross the line at times, too. We make mistakes, too. But for the most part, we say this. Hey, I love my beliefs. I don't want them to be your laws. Right? I mean, generally, for the most part, that's what we say. On the left, my environmental beliefs must be your laws and control every aspect of your life. My beliefs on COVID must be your laws and control every aspect of your life. Abortion and so forth, gay marriage, it doesn't matter. Any of my beliefs need to be your laws, right? Is that kind of a fair statement for the left?
Yeah, this is the thing. Well, you know, you're right. The right falls into this trap, too. They want sometimes conservative judges to deliver conservative political outcomes. But my response to that, whoever that line of reasoning comes from, is if you're going to live in a society that's, you know, built around a constitution that enshrines individual rights, whenever the government gets in the business of determining what rights are and who gets them, the people want to say. It's really simple. I mean, that's sort of the underlying principle to democracy. Well, if you have a court with life tenure, unaccountable judges who are deciding who and what who gets rights and what those rights are, well, that, and you can see, nobody actually wants that because you have no say. So if the court is packed with liberals, conservatives will be upset. If the court is packed with conservatives, or vice versa, somebody's always going to be upset. So what's the solution? Get courts out of the business of making policy.
Okay, now wait a minute. Let me play devil's advocate here for a second, okay? Let's say I'm on the left now. By the way, I was raised by the left, so I can kind of relate to this. And I look at Amy Coney Barrett, and she was actually a member of a very pro-life group. She is intensely pro-life. There is no question she is. She does not like Obamacare. She disagreed with it. There is no question about that, all right? And I'm sure this is true on some other issues as well. This lady is somebody who, if I were on the left, I would look at her as an activist judge all the way, whereas maybe the first two appointments by Trump I wouldn't see as much that way. This one I would, okay? I would, almost there. So if... Mm-hmm. Here I'm a leftist, and I want my judges to control lives. I want them to legislate because they can't be voted out. They're all powerful, right? Wouldn't I look at her as an immense threat to Roe v. Wade?
You would if you believed that she was going to use her personal beliefs to decide cases. But there's no evidence in Amy Coney Barrett's background and her work on the court so far that would suggest that. If Amy Coney Barrett was going to reverse Roe v. Wade, and I don't know that she would, she wouldn't do it because she personally believes that abortion is wrong. She would do it because she doesn't think that the Constitution permits Roe v. Wade.
Right, and she feels that it was handled poorly in the first place. Now, Roe v. Wade right now is established law, but that doesn't mean it can't be challenged, and it absolutely can be challenged. And I'm just going to make a prediction right now. I think because she is... an originalist, because of that, and because I believe personally that Roe v. Wade was very, very flawed in the way it was put forward, I think that would make her a threat. But not because of her personal beliefs, but because she is an originalist. Would that be a fair thing to say?
Right. Right. That is a fair thing to say. And it sort of gets to the heart of this problem that the left has right now with attacking her, is rather than make some coherent argument about why originalism is bad, which you're not seeing, because, you know, when you ask somebody at the end of the day, would you rather have a judge decide cases based on the text of the laws that people pick or based on their personal preferences, the answer is really easy. But you don't see that attack against originalism. You see this attack against her on the theory that she'll decide cases based on her personal beliefs. But again, you know, she was a professor for years. She wrote about this, and she said it over and over and over again. That's not how judges are supposed to do their job. And now 3 years on the Court of Appeals, and we have seen time and time again that she has not decided cases according to her personal beliefs. And she's happy to put that down. She put it down in writing under oath several times during her last confirmation hearing. I mean, there's no evidence out there to support this belief that she is going to be deciding cases based on her personal beliefs.
Okay, we're speaking to Giancarlo Canaparo from the Heritage Foundation. Hey, you also wrote another article. You wrote two, Dirty Attacks Against Amy Coney Barrett, Begin Early, which, by the way, spot on. And you wrote another one that really, really hits home, Fear Not the Catholic Justice. With the way the left is looking at Amy Coney Barrett as being a Catholic, and let's just make it broader, as a Christian, okay? Isn't the left basically trying to make Christianity illegal? Christianity itself is a sin to hold Christian beliefs. If you hold Christian beliefs, by that very definition, you are a threat to their world.
For some people out there, that does seem to be the case. We've seen a Joe Biden staffer in the last few days was in a discussion on Twitter with somebody, and she said, look, we're not there yet, but someday it'll be the case that holding Christian, Muslim, and Jewish beliefs are disqualifying from public office. And that has been echoed by several of the senators who will be interviewing Judge Barrett when she gets there, including maybe Hirano of Hawaii. But then some critics have gotten a little clever, and they noticed how poorly this line of attack worked. You recall the last time when Feinstein said, yep, the dogma was loudly within you, and that's bad.
Well, Giancarlo, really quick, after she diced Feinstein, and she did, I mean, it was a beatdown, a nice one, with a smile. Okay, but, you know, with a bat that had a fuzzy thing around it. I mean, it was very nice, but it was a beatdown. After Feinstein just, let's face it, burned up in the atmosphere on reentry, do you think anybody else is going to want to try this line of reasoning with her? I mean, seriously, Mazie Hirono, I'd put nothing past her because, sorry, my personal view is she's crazy. But isn't this just going to make ACB look better?
Well, if they pursue the line of attack in the same ham-fisted way, yes. But they've gotten a little bit clever. Some of the people have gotten clever. They said, it's not a problem that she's a Catholic. It's a problem that she decides cases based on her Catholic beliefs. Well, we've come full circle. What's the evidence for that? You'll never see it. You'll see a lot of Democratic politicians and liberal pundits make that claim. She'll decide cases based on her personal Catholic beliefs or Christian beliefs, but you will never see any evidence to back it up.
You know, Giancarlo, would they consider it evidence if she makes a ruling and it happens to agree with her Catholic beliefs? I mean, would they find it evidence if an atheist makes a ruling that happens to agree with atheist beliefs? Does that automatically equate to the atheist did it because they're an atheist? What if they were just reading the law?
Only. Right, exactly right. And that's where you get down to it. Those kind of attacks only stick if you don't read what Judge Barrett does and how she does it. If she reaches an outcome that is, you know, aligned with Catholic interests, you read that opinion, you will see that it is not the Catholic beliefs that are deciding that case for her, but it's the way that the law requires it to be decided.
Yeah, I think they're going to have a really hard time pressing that. I think this is going to be easy. One last prediction before we get to your information on how to reach you, okay? What do you think of Mitt Romney in all of this? Because I had thought for sure he would vote against it because I had thought Mitt Romney knew that he has no chance at a second term. Okay, Republicans in Utah, well over 90% like Trump. And Mitt Romney has, you know, been at odds with Trump. Now he comes out and says he supports having a vote. Do you think that he actually thinks that voting for her helps him have a chance to survive a primary next time around? Or do you think that he just goes against it and votes her down anyway? Just a prediction.
I'm not an expert in politics, but I think what he recognizes is that it is the Senate's role to take up the advising consent. And, you know, you can throw around accusations of hypocrisy and whatnot all you want, but the fact remains that the Senate has the power to do this, and it can if it wants to. And there's no reason other than being upset, the Democrats being upset, there's no reason not to do this. And I think that he recognizes that this is just sort of the normal course of business, and but for the sound and the fury of the moment we're in, this is normal. This is business is normal.
You know what? I think she's going to fly through on a party line vote, but I think she'll fly through because she's just too good. Giancarlo Canaparo, how can people reach you? How can they read all your great stuff?
Sure. Well, you can find me on heritage.org, and I often write for the Daily Signal.
Oh, you write at the Daily Signal. Oh, excellent. I will make sure to catch you there. Thank you so much, sir.
All right.
All right.
My pleasure.
You have a great day. Come back anytime. And with that, folks, let's take a time out. And when we come back, we'll be with Steve House here on Rush to Reason, KLZ 560.
Your estate plan may have big tax implications for your loved ones. Schedule a free consultation now with KLZ's mobile estate planner, Michael Bailey. Recent changes in the tax law, like the SECURE Act, have already impacted passing on your IRA. Because of today's relatively low tax rates, you need to meet with Michael Bailey now, before the election, so you can set up your plan before things might change again. Make some wise moves before things change again. KLZradio.com/estate.
Hi, this is Scott Wilder. You've heard us talk about the COVID-19 emergency relief work that Save the Children is doing in this country. You know, Save the Children works in 125 countries around the world, but also works right here at home, especially in times of crisis and disaster. And COVID-19 certainly qualifies as that. Your $100 gift, we've told you, can provide breakfast, lunch, and dinner for one child for 10 days. $300 can do that for one child for a month, and $1,000 can do that for one child all the way through the end of this semester. 30 million U.S. school children count on school for more than education, count on school for also their nutrition. Save the Children is standing in the gap and inviting you to do the same. Would you join us? Call 800-570-5155, 800-570-5155, or go to SaveChildrenKLZ.org.
October 10th, mark it on your calendar. It's the Western Conservative Summit, and it will feature, at no cost, the movie America, America, God Shed His Grace on Thee. Kim Munson here. Friday, Jeff Hunt, director of the Centennial Institute, shares what he has planned for the 2020 Western Conservative Summit. Casper Stockham, candidate for CD7, updates us on the latest issues you care about. Mortgage specialist Lauren Levy and award-winning realtor Karen Levine inform us about their hot markets. All this Friday, 6 to 7 a.m., 1 to 2 p.m., and 10 to 11 p.m., right here on KLZ 560.
With every crisis, there is opportunity. Buying or selling your business? Kim Munson recommends Chris Cantwell with Transworld Business Advisors. Find Chris Cantwell at KimMunson.com. That's MONSON.
Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. Andy Pate sitting in for a vacationing John Rush. He will be back tomorrow. And by the way, folks, just so you know, we're doing movies tomorrow. They're about movies with Russians. The Russians are coming tomorrow. But right now, coming on is Steve House, candidate for Congressional District 6. Did I get that right, Steve?
So movies with Russians, as in Ivan Drago?
Yes!
Kind of Russian?
Exactly! Yeah, Rocky IV might be mentioned about, 15 or 16 times. I actually like that movie, and I'm ashamed of myself, but I loved it. Go ahead.
The movie Limitless with Bradley Cooper, where he gets this brain stimulant, and the guy that he borrows money from to make money in the stock market happens to be a Russian.
Oh, yeah.
And
I'm going to put that down. I'm cheating. Can I cheat off your answer sheet?
He's got some great lines in that movie where he tells them that if he doesn't pay him back the loan, he said, "We don't kill you at first. We just we cut you at the waist, we pull the skin over your head and suffocate you. It's like, wow, that sounds bad.
That does sound. Yeah, actually, that sounds a little bit like the debate the other night.
Oh my goodness!
What did you think? Can I get your thoughts on that, or is that something you'd rather not give your thoughts on?
No, you know, first of all, I wasn't surprised because we're in a situation, and I think Americans can learn one thing from that debate, and that is that capitalism and socialism are very far apart. And
that's a good point.
Typically in a debate, a presidential debate, they're going to find one or two things they agree on. But when you're representing socialism in the case of Biden and capitalism and refereed capitalism on the part of Trump, they're so diametrically opposed to each other. There's no agreement on anything, and it turns into a brawl.
Steve, what was it like for you to watch that kind of an event? And what I mean is this: you are a very measured, lawyerly, scholarly kind of debater. I've seen you in debates. You're very personable, but you're just so intellectual, right? You inform people while connecting with them. And in this debate, it was just bam, 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 back and forth. Trump is obviously a very different type from you. Extremely aggressive, going at him, going at him, going at him. Biden is, you know, he's his own type as well, which is very different. What was it like for you to watch two guys engage in something that's totally different from how you'd do it?
You know, it bothers you, right? I mean, it's almost like you have instant ADD, and I don't want to disrespect people with ADD, but you're trying to figure out what's being said, and there's too much going on. And quite frankly, there was a third voice in there, right? I mean, so it wasn't like Chris Wallace was just sitting there quietly either. So it becomes this noisy, I don't know, it almost gives you a headache kind of thing. And I look at it and go, okay, so if I'm Donald Trump, the two things that I'm going to do to get attention is, one, I'm going to let Joe Biden talk. And I'm going to let him talk and talk and talk, which he didn't do by interrupting you know, a fair amount. He put pressure on him. He worked Joe's mind over a bit, you know, by, you know, keep pushing the button. But the other thing is in the second debate, if this were even possible, I would actually pause so long that they would actually have to come back to me and go, you know, Mr. Trump or President Trump. They would have to come back and pause so long that everybody looks at him before he says something.
You know, and
because I think they'd get more attention that way.
And I agree, Steve. I don't think the approach worked. I'm going to break it down in the next hour. Although, I think his performance is not going to age well. I think actually things are looking much better for Trump than Biden in the next debate. But in this one, you know, connecting with those suburban moms out there, I don't think they're going to like watching somebody interrupt. I just don't think that's going to go over with them. That's what they tell their kids not to do. And
right.
I just think, I think that's going to be a real problem. Now, talking about Chris, geez, what's his last name? I suddenly spaced it.
Wallace.
Thanks. I always think Chris Matthews, and I just don't want to say that because it's like profanity. And I shouldn't do that on air. Yeah. So talking about Chris Wallace. Now, look, I understand it was, you know, pandemonium out there, but there's no question Chris Wallace was very biased. He's a Democrat, he's a proud one, and he was in Biden's corner. And there are a lot of examples. I'm going to give those in the next hour, but it was just crazy. Have you ever been in a debate where the moderator was just flat out for the other guy?
You know what? I believe I was, yes. I actually debated Rick Palazzio one time, who was the Democrat State Party chair when I was the state GOP chair, and the moderator was Roy Romer. So he was very biased, although
Roy Romer
went okay.
Was your moderator?
Yeah.
Wow.
He was, yes. And then I was the moderator of a debate in the mayor's race in Aurora. I moderated a debate at the African Chamber. So I get to play moderator. And the one thing that I learned is if a candidate is taking over the debate improperly, going over time, et cetera, the one thing you can't do is you can't actually correct them on an issue. All you do is say, you're over your time. When Chris gets involved and he starts to say, but, you know, there was 1.5 million jobs there. There was this. He starts to debate the actual candidate on a particular issue. That's when a moderator's gone over the line, in my book.
I totally agree. I thought Trump did have a classic comment when he basically said, am I debating you now? instead of him? Okay.
Yes.
I mean, that wasn't as good as, you know, because you'd be in jail when he said that to Hillary Clinton. That was a classic. Trump is one of the funnest people to watch talk. But debate is a totally different thing. Debate is a totally different arena. It takes a totally different approach. You got to look at what your goals are, what your market is, which voters you're trying to reach. And, you know, I think in some ways, I think he did well, by the way. But in some other ways,
very well informed, very well informed.
Yeah, very well informed. And here was the thing that I kind of wondered. And since you've been in this position, let me ask you this. He was in a position where clearly the moderator was on the other side. You know, I was joking on Tuesday before the debate, will it break, you know, distancing, social distancing when Biden and Chris, you know, share the same lectern? Because I kind of felt it was going to be that way. When you're going into a situation like that, does that make you feel that you've got to be the moderator for Biden as well? That you've got to be the one to puncture him because Chris ain't going to do it?
Probably, yeah. I mean, I think in that particular case, you've got to throw something out there that upsets the apple cart.
Right.
You know, and I'll give you an example. I was effectively in a debate today. I was being interviewed by the editorial board of a local newspaper, and one of the guys on there was, you know, he's openly known to be anti-Republican. And so I was basically trying to speak to the board, but one guy kept being the, you know, antagonist, if you will.
Sure.
So ultimately, you know, we got into this conversation, for example, about the Supreme Court. And, you know, I decided to upset his apple cart, and I did it two ways. I said, well, there's really two issues at play. So number one is, if you believe 2016 was a mistake, do you believe 2016 was a mistake? So I asked him a question, and he said yes. And I said, then if we don't review this judge, if we don't vote on her, then we're basically making two mistakes in a row. We made one in 16, we're making 20. Do two wrongs make a right? And he was kind of silent on that.
One second, Steve. So you're not saying, do you think the election in 2016 was a mistake, but rather when Obama appointed somebody, you know, tried, and it didn't go through because the Senate and presidency were in different hands, right?
Yeah, they didn't interview him. They didn't actually vote on him. They
right.
didn't vet, if you will. So Merrick Garland was never vetted. And, you know, so Amy Coney Barrett shouldn't be because of what happened in 16. And it said, do two wrongs make a right? And, you know, that silenced him a bit. And then I said, the second issue is, don't you think that it's wrong that America picks a Supreme Court judge and it only requires 51 votes in the Senate? And he said, absolutely. So you agree with me that Harry Reid made a mistake everybody told him he would pay for. But he made a big mistake cutting it back to 51 votes, because if you can't get a little bipartisanship on a Supreme Court judge, we're talking about a branch of government that should have some bipartisanship in it. And he was like, yes. And that basically ends the subject.
You trapped him. You put cheese on the, you put the bait on the trap, and he stepped right into it.
Yeah.
Nicely done.
I mean,
Nicely done.
That's the way you handle a protagonist or a moderator. You know, that really wants to debate, the best thing you can do is, if they're going to come in, bring them all the way in.
Yeah, I got to be honest. And then once again, I'll be talking about this in the next hour, folks, if you guys want to hear me go into the debate. But I believe that Trump was coached to do exactly what he did. You know, I've dealt with some campaigns, and the fact is he's been busy doing a lot of other things. This was a tactic that they gave him to do, and I think it was a terrible mistake. I really do. And I think they're going to correct that going forward.
I would agree with you.
Yeah.
I would agree with you. I don't think it was right.
Yeah, I think they're going to correct that. Hey, can I hold you over the break, go into some other areas?
Sure.
All right, let's take a time out, and we'll come right back with Steve House on Rush to Reason, KLZ 560.
The number one goal of the Enchanted Kitchens design team is to create a space that fits your daily life. Yes, you want a kitchen that looks nicer and more modern. But for you, the primary value of a redesign is the difference it will make in your everyday life. You need a functional, open space so you can have a pleasant day-to-day experience in your kitchen. Above all, you want a kitchen that works. At Enchanted Kitchens, you will partner with a professional team of designers who know how to ask the right questions to help you plan out the kitchen you and your family really need. As a Rush to Reason listener, after you've visited their experience center, the Enchanted Kitchens team will schedule a follow-up meeting in your home for free to assess your space and learn specifics, like how often do you entertain and for how many. In order to get the functional kitchen of your dreams, you need the Enchanted Kitchens design team on your side. Visit klzradio.com/kitchens, where magic meets design.
Instead of transporting your firearms to and from the range, you can store them safely on-site at the Franktown Firearms Armory. After purchasing a firearm, the team at Franktown recommends that you shoot consistently with your own gun on the range, as well as signing up for one of their proprietary training courses or one-on-one instruction so you can develop confidence handling your gun. You can also store your firearms temporarily while you're on vacation or protect your heirloom weapons without taking up space in your gun safe at home. The team at Franktown prides themselves on developing long-term relationships with their clients. They see beginners turn into experts all the time. First-time buyers come in looking for guidance and come back because they're having fun. Learn to shoot with confidence in a family atmosphere. Store your firearms at Franktown. Fill out the contact form at klzradio.com/Franktown for pricing. Franktown Firearms, where friends are made.
Hi, I'm Rolly Purefoy, and after all these years and hundreds of radio spots on many stations, I still find it hard to convey how I feel about our dealership in Fort Lupton without it being just another 60 seconds of car dealer shtick and hype. Let's face it, there are only so many glowing things I could say about Purefoy Chevrolet, but at the end of the day, does the ad sell cars and trucks? I want and need your business, especially if you're in the market for a new Chevrolet or a decent used vehicle. And really, all I have to offer is a good buying experience that I know is sincerely appreciated and valued by our customers. 60 years in business has taught us many things that makes the difference in doing business. We're not perfect by any means, but we're honest about what we do and have the ethics and integrity to back it up. We have all the same factory rebates and incentives that all the other dealers have to offer, plain and simple. So do yourself a favor. If you're in the market for a vehicle or need reliable service, please give us a try. We're just up the road in Fort Lupton or on the web at purefoychevrolet.com. Find new roads.
This is Josh with Business Equipment Service. Here's a message from one of our satisfied customers. Susan at Premier Manufacturing says, "In the 2+ years I have been with Premier Manufacturing, my interaction with BES has been nothing but positive. When we have a service issue, they do their best to have someone sent out that same day, and the service people have always been friendly, efficient, and professional." If you are looking into purchasing office equipment or have a problem with equipment you currently have, give us a call at 303-825-5664.
It's time to leave your safe space. This is Rush to Reason on KLZ 560.
And welcome back to Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. Andy Pate sitting here with Steve House, candidate for CD6. Steve, two quick things I want to clean up before we move on. All right. Number one, how do people reach you? How do they help you win this seat? Because you are the kind of person we need there.
Thank you. It's House for Colorado, HOUSCFOR, Colorado.com. They can go there, volunteer, they can donate, they can do... you can send me an email if they have questions. All of that is possible.
Excellent. And the other thing I wanted to say, one last thing about the debate. What I really liked about Trump is he answered questions. He was direct. There was no question in that debate which one of them was direct in answering questions and which one was dodging questions. And in that way, I thought Trump had it in common with you because I've seen you in debate. All you do is answer questions. I've never seen you dodge one. And that's kind of what I saw from Joe Biden a lot.
Well, yeah, I mean, everything from packing the Supreme Court to, you know, is he or is he not for the Green New Deal? I mean, he says, no, I'm not for it. And then the next thing you know, he's talking about the ROI on it. And I'm like, well, if you're not for something, why are you stating an ROI on it? I didn't get that.
The return on investment?
Yeah.
Sorry, cell phone. I wanted to make sure I heard you right. Yeah, I mean, he's saying it'll pay for itself. Why? It'll pay for itself. And then he says, but I'm not for it. I mean, I could not. I couldn't believe. And by the way, Chris Wallace, how dare you? How dare you not call him on that? Hey, Your running mate co-sponsored the Green New Deal. The head of your environmental team, AOC, is the biggest national cheerleader for the Green New Deal. Can you please at least tell us where you disagree with the Green New Deal? Wallace didn't say a word. He let him off the hook. And I think he did so because he wanted to.
Yeah, of course he did. I mean, he doesn't. If you don't like Donald Trump, you're certainly not going to try to help him. You're going to do what you can to help the other guy. That's just the way it works. So,
you know, you probably don't deal with that as much, though. You don't provoke people, from what I've seen.
Yeah, I will. I will under certain circumstances. I think there's some stuff that's just flat out unjust, right? I mean, if you look at America's healthcare system spending 18% of GDP right now and how we handle it,
yeah,
I think that's totally wrong. It's unjust. I'll provoke somebody with that for sure.
Well, I was going to ask you a little bit about that. Now, I know you always talk about the healthcare system, and if you're tired of talking about it, just let me know. Okay, but I don't get this chance with you as often as John. What would you say Jason Crow is doing wrong and you would do right with healthcare?
He hasn't done anything. I mean, I think you know, he's going to end up supporting the Medicare for All or a public option. And
awful.
Quite frankly, we can do better than that. It's not just wrong. It's just not what it needs to be. So, you know, it's one of those things where we just really have to, we have to go after what we should do, because if we go from 18% to 20% of GDP, Andy, we're going to be in so deep of trouble competitively. I mean, we won't be able to sell products around the world at any reasonable price because healthcare will be costing so much per product.
Let me ask you about voting blocks here, because the right is very excited right now that a voting block with gun owners has really expanded, of course, because there's just been this record rise in people purchasing guns. But the left, especially during the Obama years, really put through a rise in people who were on Medicaid, right? And so you have a lot of people, once you're on, or once you've been on for a while, even if you've come off, you probably are going to vote in favor of that, right? Because you don't want government to take away something that helped you through a hard time. Do you think that Medicaid is damaging both politics and the system itself?
Yes. I mean, first of all, it's damaging people. There was a University of Virginia study published, it was 2 or 3 years ago, that said you were 13% more likely to die if you're on Medicaid in the hospital than if you had no insurance at all. So, you know, you have that criteria, and, you know, in reality, you know, we shouldn't have Medicaid the way we have it. I mean, people deserve better than that. And, you know, there's people who talk about pre-existing conditions. You know, you hear this all the time. I mean, Joe Biden was going after Trump. You know, if you kill Obamacare, you kill pre-existing conditions. You do not, because insurance companies, especially commercial insurance companies, have made it part of their marketing plan, part of their pricing structure. One of the reasons why we have a high premiums is in part because of the coverage. So they're not going to drop pre-existing conditions. We already know that. We've talked to them. You know, what's going to happen is the question will be whether states maintain Medicaid the way they do or they do something different. But that whole thing about pre-existing conditions and Obamacare, yeah, it may have drove people to be forced to cover them. But if it goes away because of the Supreme Court, pre-existing conditions are still going to be covered. And it doesn't matter how many times you say it, Joe Biden's going to tell you that's not true.
But Steve, shouldn't, and I agree with you, by the way, but shouldn't a company have the right to say, tell you what, we're not going to cover pre-existing conditions, and because of that, here's how much we can lower everybody's premiums? I mean, if they want,
you know,
I know they're going to sound heartless to some people and they're going to take some heat, but on the other hand, lower premiums are lower premiums.
Well, I know. And so what you have to do is you have to give people options, right?
Yeah.
There are going to be some people who want, you know, options like that and some who don't. And, you know, that's going to be up to them. But the bottom line is everybody will have coverage. Pre-existing conditions can be covered or will be covered, and it'll be a lot less money. If we don't drop this thing from 18% of GDP down to 8 or 9 at the very highest, we're not going to be competitive in world markets, and quite frankly, we'll be wasting a lot of money.
Steve, you're having to compete in a district that is fairly divided politically, I would say. Is that a pretty fair statement?
Yeah, it's probably a third, and or maybe it's more like 33%, 33%, and the remainder is unaffiliated.
Right.
And the unaffiliated declares itself as moderate, but it's not always moderate.
Well, in that kind of a setting, is it pretty hard to come out and basically try to tell people, look, Medicaid is hurting you? And if I can just give an example, obviously Medicaid isn't going to pay a hospital. It's not going to pay out the same way that a private payment would, right? So if they get lower amounts of money on all their Medicaid patients, that means they got to raise the prices on everybody else. Am I missing something here?
That is correct. I mean, it's that restaurant analogy, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, you get a bill, there's nothing there that you can do. And so, you get five different bills, you know, from the waiter, the maitre d', and everybody else. So what you got to do is figure out how you're going to pay them. And then if you decide you can't pay as much as I'm being billed, then I'll end up with part of your bill, too. And that's just a crazy, crazy concept. There's all this cost shifting. There's even legalized cost shifting ratios in healthcare, Andy, and that's a problem. We have to get that resolved.
Doesn't Medicaid therefore punish work? What I mean is people who work hard for a living, you've got the four people, you know, you got the five people there at dinner. One doesn't work, and maybe they're out of work because of bad circumstances, right? But maybe they just don't want to work. I don't know. I don't know the person. But one person doesn't work, four people do, and the one person can only use Medicaid and pay 8% of their dinner bill, which means the rest of you have to pay an extra, 4%. I mean, 3 actually, but you know what I mean? Isn't it punishing work to have Medicaid? Aren't you looking at everybody who's earning a living and saying, because you're earning a living, you're having to pay more?
I guess it's an interesting question, right? Because we pay FICA, we pay taxes for Medicare and Medicaid.
Yeah.
So if there were less people on Medicaid, as we saw in 2018, 2019 with the working American, the unemployment numbers are very low. Obviously, it costs us less in taxes to pay those things. So you could technically make that situation. But there are plenty of people who work full time who are on Medicaid because their wages aren't high enough to afford anything else either. That's because healthcare is way too expensive.
By the way, you bring up a good point about more people being off those programs. Food stamp programs dropped 7-8 million between 2017, yes. 2018, 2019. Do you think that you can sell it in your race, because you're not Trump. You're different from Trump. You're basically telling people, hey, man, I support him when he does things that help you. I don't care. I don't support him when he gets in a Twitter war with LeBron James. It doesn't help you. It doesn't put food in your pocket.
That's right.
But the simple fact is GDP growth was 1.5% in 2016, Obama's last year, 2.3 in year one under Trump, 2.95 year two. I mean, how is that not something that we can sell on our side?
We have to be able to sell it. I mean, quite frankly, not only is it important, but the Green New Deal, part of the Green New Deal is forecasting that you have to make sure GDP doesn't grow greater than 1.6%, because if it does, the economic activity associated with that type of growth adds too much carbon to the atmosphere.
Yeah.
I mean, there
good
are things
point.
Like that, Andy, that a lot of people don't realize, right?
Quick. Oh, absolutely. Quick question here, and I'll give you the rest of the time with this. We got about a minute and a half. Your opponent, Jason Crow, is he doing a lot of the hide and Biden? Because Biden was hiding on issues like, Green New Deal. Not really. It's not my plan. Of course, it's your plan. And things like this, pack the Supreme Court. Obviously, that's not your position. You'd be in the House. But you know what I mean. Is he hiding on issues? Are you having to smoke him out? What's happening?
Well, we'd love to see him debate us 4 or 5 times. We haven't gotten him committed to a debate yet. There's been plenty of offers. And, I think.
What's he waiting for? December?
I think he feels confident in his position in this race, he views it as, once he beat Kaufman, he would have the seat for a long time. And, I think that a lot of times they incumbents, I mean, Diana DeGette's noted for not debating much. Joe Neguse won't debate. I mean, to me, that's just unconscionable. I mean, the American people and the people in the district deserve the right to have a debate. And we ought to have a debate. We ought to have 2 or 3 of them in every congressional and Senate race in the country. And we don't do it, and it's just wrong, in my view.
Are you putting out any kind of a mailer or anything saying to everybody, why won't he debate?
Oh, I'm sure that you'll see something like that, yes.
Okay. I think that would be a very good idea. All right, Steve, you got a few seconds left here. One more time, how do people reach you? How do they help you out?
House for Colorado, HOUSCFOR, colorado.com. You can email me there. You can donate there. You can sign up to be a volunteer there. Pass the word. Tell people you know that they should vote for me. That's the number one way to persuade voters. It really is.
I will tell every person I know. Thank you, sir. See you next time.
Okay.
You bet. And folks, thank you for joining us. If you missed the first hour, it comes on again at 6 p.m. It'll replay then. And the next hour, we're going to lead off with Joe Jackson, communications director of the Colorado Republican Party. Until then, let's take a break right here on Rush to Reason KLZ 560.